Home Show with guest host Brian Weber on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to another hour of the program. Great to have you in the jungle on a Friday. Weber in for Rome. 1-800-636-8686. Hit me up on Twitter, BW Weber, Weber with two B's. Emails, rome@haveatake.com. Coming to you live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studio. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. In 20 minutes, we talk college football with Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com. With Summer League action winding down in the NBA, let's say hello to one of the best in the business, Steve Kuyler from BasketballInsiders.com. Steve, you and I have chatted on many shows, on many platforms, but it is my pleasure to say welcome to the jungle. How are you, Steve?
I am well, B. It's a good fit for you, too.
Thank you. Because, you know, all these folks on Twitter think that this is contrived. You can say I'm angry on every show I do. So let's talk about what's going on in Summer League. Understanding that this is exhibition basketball, we don't focus on stats in spring training. Still, Lonzo Ball has energized the Laker organization, and I'm watching these games on TV. The gym is jumping. Another triple-double last night. But, Steve, how much can we really take away from Summer League action when a good chunk of the players on the floor wind up in the D-League or in Europe?
Yeah, the Summer League is the worst predictor of NBA success. But I think what I take away from it is Lonzo came out in game one and was dreadful, was not good. In game two, he realized, hey, maybe the perimeter isn't where I should be, and he started, you know, being more aggressive inside, and good things started to happen. He was rebounding well. He was passing well. There were a lot of things that started to work. And then you see in game three, he did miss that game against De'Aaron Fox and the Kings. But his third game, he started to put it all together. Still not shooting the ball incredibly well, but he's figuring out in the NBA pace and space where he can get things. And it's a very good look for him. And when you look at the progression, and that's what I want to see from a player is, you know, can you get better game to game? Because if you can get better game to game, that's how you have a really good career.
Steve, what's going on with the shoe business? So you got Big Baller Brand and the old man running his mouth, but you've been tracking night by night the evolution. A couple nights ago, Lonzo wearing Nikes. Last night, wearing Adidas. Is he looking to get a shoe deal done?
Well, again, I think we'll see. You know, the thing about his shoe specifically is while they've been touting, you know, they put out a red, white, and blue version right around the 4th of July. They still got to make them. They haven't actually manufactured these shoes yet. You know, anybody that has bought them, you know, the disclaimer is they'll be ready sometime in November. You know, the fact that they haven't been able to make shoes that he can even wear in games yet is kind of, you know, a signal there. But also, you know, the thing is this shoe was not, his shoe is not meant to be a performance shoe. His shoe is supposed to be a lifestyle shoe, a shoe you wear out, you know, socially. So, you know, I think some of this is, yes, I think Lonzo's still in the business of maybe landing a shoe deal. But the other part is they haven't actually made the Zoe 2 yet.
Talking NBA with our pal Steve Kuyler from BasketballInsiders.com. Steve, I'm based in Southern California. I work for Pac-12 Network, so I saw most of the meaningful games that Lonzo played in his 1 year in Westwood. We know he's got the funky motion, but he could knock it down with regularity. He hasn't been great from the three-point stripe with the NBA distance. Do you think he's going to struggle in that transition when we get to the regular season?
Yeah, for a couple of reasons. One, it's timing of his shot. You know, he's got a very slow release, and in the NBA, teams close out really quickly, and I think you even saw it here in Summer League. You know, the space that he was getting, you know, at UCLA and the time that he was getting to release the ball is very different than what he was getting even here. And it's going to get worse in the NBA, especially as coaches know, just run out on him because you're likely going to get a piece of the ball. He's going to have to learn this. You know, I think the other part of it, too, is the college game is so much slower. A much slower shot clock, but even the offenses, even pace offenses in college basketball are nothing like what you're getting in the NBA, and you're getting to places sooner than you expect, and your rhythm and your timing isn't exactly right. So there's a lot he's got to work through to get as comfortable as he was at UCLA. But again, I remind everybody, you know, the draft is a what are you going to be in 4 years discussion, not what are you going to be in 4 months. You know, he's got a lot of time to work on this, and I think we've seen that his work ethic, even out here in Vegas, he was in a gym every morning at 10 o'clock, you know, getting up shots and really trying to work on this. So he didn't take Summer League as a vacation. He took Summer League as, you know, more time to put in work.
Steve, I want to be totally transparent. I'm using this conversation to squeeze out one more day of NBA talk because I love hoops as much as I love football. Big picture, do you think the NBA has almost matched the NFL in making its offseason as intriguing in many ways as the regular season?
Well, nothing beats the NFL. I mean, it's simply a juggernaut that just encompasses a lot more fans. But I think we've seen over the years that a lot of things are lining up in a really interesting way. You know, the draft has become such a spectacle, and, you know, there are great marquee teams that are looking at the draft. You know, when the Lakers are involved in the draft, it's always a bigger thing. You know, free agency has become, you know, very volatile in the NBA. You know, we're not seeing guys stay, even guys you thought were going to stay, like maybe a Chris Paul changes teams. You know, there have been enough trades and rumors and transactional kind of stuff to keep this thing going. And the fact that Summer League had 17,500 on Saturday says it's not just me. So, you know, it's really becoming a big thing.
And it works for us in the media because most of us don't want to talk baseball anymore. Steve Kuyler, BasketballInsiders.com is our guest here on CBS Sports Radio. Let's talk about what's been going on with the trade conversation, apparently now on hold, between the Knicks and the Rockets. What's the latest on Carmelo Anthony, Steve?
Well, it was kind of funny. A friend of ours was in the elevator with Daryl Morey's son and his wife, and Daryl Morey's son said, "We got him. We got Carmelo Anthony," and started to tell this person what was going on. And Daryl Morey's wife was like, no, he can't talk about it. They were close. It was really close. I think Houston felt like they had assembled the right package. It was going to be a four-team deal. The Knicks were going to get the same pennies on the dollar, is an understatement. They were getting half a cent on the dollar. It was going to be a really bad return. The Knicks have reached a deal to hire Kings executive Scott Perry, who was with the Orlando Magic last year, and kind of he said is, let's pump the brakes on this a little bit and revisit, and one, see if we can get Carmelo to maybe consider staying, and two, revisit if he'll consider other teams to try to get something of value out of him. So, you know, some of this has been telegraphed. The Knicks were saying this for a while, that they were bringing in new leadership. They wanted to let new leadership take a crack at this, and I think that's where this thing stands. You know, ultimately, I think Carmelo is going to get traded because I don't think it fits for where the Knicks really want to be going forward. But some of this is you've got a new guy who's got new relationships and a new sense of what the marketplace is, having just done this with the Sacramento Kings.
Chatting with Steve Kuyler of BasketballInsiders.com. Steve, let's say it's only a big two in Houston, Chris Paul and James Harden. Do you have any issues about how they coexist because they're both ball-centric? And where would you slot Houston in the West next year?
Well, I like Houston. I mean, consider this, that, you know, really what they gave up in terms of Patrick Beverley and young guys that really didn't contribute. You know, if you said, hey, I'm trading Patrick Beverley for Chris Paul, you're going to tell me every single time I'm better. And that's the truth. Now, you got to worry about durability. Chris has had injury issues. You know, the other part, too, is, you know, who's going to have the ball in their hands the most. You know, where James Harden excelled last year was really ball control. How does that all fit? But I think the team is better. I think they're probably still in that discussion for second, third best team in the West. They've got some issues they've got to solve in terms of defense. They're not done. I think the Carmelo Anthony thing says, you know, they're going to keep working at that and other things. But Daryl Morey said this in early June. If you really want to compete with the Golden State Warriors, you got to change your risk profile. And they're willing to take some chances. You know, everybody looks at this Chris Paul thing, but remember, he didn't sign a long-term extension. He's only there until this time next year. And if it doesn't work, he could walk away.
And, Steve, I just saw the tweet from Adrian Wojnarowski, Wojbomb, ESPN. Scott Perry is, in fact, going to be hired by the Knicks. It's official, on his way from Sacramento to New York City. I'm here in Southern California. Laker fans convinced Paul George is on his way next season. You know, grew up here, Kobe fan. What'd you make of his comments in Sports Illustrated about being open to seeing how it plays out in OKC? I know the counter is, what's he supposed to say, but do you think there's a real possibility that he and Russ click on and off the floor, they have a good run in the postseason, and he might actually stay with the Thunder?
Well, the one thing, you know, from the very beginning of this is, you know, and it's the game of telephone that now happens in the media. Sources say, agent said, then becomes Paul said, then becomes Paul wants, and this is the only thing Paul will do. Paul never said any of those things. It was always hearsay about how serious he was about the Lakers. But this is the way the situation was explained to me. If he can't find, you know, that winning situation, he wants to be home. He wants to be where he's happy and he's comfortable and have the chance to do things that he dreamed about. But the first goal is win. And can I be in a winning situation? It's one of the reasons why the Lakers were concerned he was going to land with, you know, the Boston Celtics or the Cleveland Cavaliers. It's why they should be concerned that he landed in Oklahoma City. And the narrative that this is a year-long recruiting trip is absolutely true. You know, the Oklahoma City Thunder are not the most glamorous organization from afar, but when you get inside their process and their building, they're amazing. They're as good as anything in basketball. And if they can win, it's a real threat. Now, I still think that it's a 70-30 equation that he's going to be a Laker next year. But, again, you got to watch how that team plays, because Paul said it. We end up in the conference finals or the NBA finals, I'd be foolish to leave, and that's what the Thunder are banking on.
Let's wrap it up with a big picture. Thanks in part to Kevin Durant leaving millions of dollars on the table. The Warriors have kept just about everybody of significance. I think making sure Andre Iguodala stayed in the Bay Area was huge. How much separation is there still between the Warriors and everybody else?
Yeah, it's huge. It's not even close. You know, look, and, you know, maybe that's anticlimactic. Maybe fans don't like that. But I think having a dynasty that you know is going to be there and everybody's got to come with their best effort, you're seeing these teams in the West load up to try to run at them, I think that's good. I think we're going to see a lot more competitive basketball than we've ever seen, because teams aren't putting D-League guys up on the floor anymore. You know, the Warriors got a little bit better. They added Omri Caspi. I love Jordan Bell. He's looked great out here in summer league. So the rich got richer for sure, and I think Draymond Green said this week. You know, you still haven't seen the best basketball out of the Warriors, believe it or not. So they could be very good, especially year two, Kevin Durant, comfortable, Steph Curry, comfortable contract out of the way. I think the Warriors are set up real nice.
Steve, great information as always. Thank you for allowing me to squeeze one more day of NBA conversation out before it's on the football. We'll chat with you soon. Thanks, Steve.
Anytime, Pete.
Steve Kyler, BasketballInsiders.com. As mentioned, Steve and I have chatted elsewhere, but a real pleasure to bring him into the jungle for the very first time. If you want to be a part of the show, it's 1-800-636-8686. Open for business on Twitter, BW Weber, Weber with two B's. I was talking about Brady's future, wrapping up the business end of hour number one of the program. We got some email action going on, and that's always a great way to get in because you can be a little bit more coherent with your thoughts. It's Rome at haveatake.com. Dear Brian, I would have responded to my wife's claims about having a concussion sooner, but wait, what was I talking about, son? Thomas Brady, being in Detroit, wore ice cream. I got one that's like 15 paragraphs long. Fellas, we live in now a Twitter universe here. I'm old. I remember we took faxes when I was working for KMBR 1050 in San Francisco. Let me try to do this on the fly. Going from Nike to Adidas is like going from Jim Rome to Brian Weber. Well played. At this rate, Lonzo will be wearing Skechers shape-ups in his next game, followed by wooden clogs in the game after that. But hey, anything is better than those plastic big baller brand sneakers. Wore Lonzo choosing to go plastic trash bags over his feet instead of whatever the hell he's wearing for this year. Wore big baller brand Keenan in Tucson. Keenan, well played. But brevity is the way to go, especially because Uncle Brian is losing his eyesight and I'm too vain to get glasses. 1-800-636-8686. Hit me up on Twitter. That's BW Weber, Weber with two B's. Baseball conversation coming up 1:40 Eastern time when we welcome in Joe Sheehan from Sports Illustrated. Straight ahead, college football's on the agenda. Which power conference has the best chance of getting two teams into the playoff? We'll find out when we welcome in Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com. It's Brian Weber in for Jim Rome on CBS Sports Radio. We roll on a Friday. Brian Weber in for Jim Rome, CBS Sports Radio. Hop aboard at 1-800-636-8686. Hit me up on Twitter, BW Weber, Weber with two B's. Emails, welcome, Rome at haveatake.com. An hour from now, final hour of the program, we talk NFL with three-time Super Bowl champion Willie McGinnis of NFL Network in 20 minutes. We'll focus on baseball. Second half resumes tonight when we welcome in Joe Sheehan from Sports Illustrated. Now let's talk college football with Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com. Dennis, appreciate you taking the time. You were in Hoover, Alabama, covering SEC Media Days. What can you tell us about Houston Nutt's lawsuit against Ole Miss? How messy is this entire situation?
It's fairly messy. I don't know what the eventual outcome will be, but this throws a monkey wrench into an investigation that up until this point had been fairly straightforward in terms of SEC messiness. Ole Miss had stock itself a bowl this year and some scholarships. Now they may have violated the NCAA's corrective principle guideline, which says you can't really interfere with investigations while they're going on. And a few freeze in the administration called media members to drop a dime on the notice of allegations. That's exactly what's happened here. So it's getting complicated.
Dennis, how much separation do you see between Alabama and everybody else again this year in the SEC? You reminded us in a recent column, outside the Tide, every other team in the SEC last year lost at least four games for the first time in league history.
Yeah, I was shocked when people reacted. I guess it was today at the ACC Media Days to Jimbo Fisher saying the ACC is the best conference. I don't even think it's a discussion at this point. You know, they'll play football again in September, but, you know, the ACC went 9-3 in bowls. They have won two of the last four Heismans and two of the last four national championships. The SEC, in many ways, had really its worst, I guess, year of the modern era. Sure, they didn't win the championship with a second to go, but think about how hard that is for every school in the league in this era of super conferences to lose at least four games. You literally could not answer the question last year, who was the second best team, because it was a 13-way tie for second.
Talking college football with Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com. So Jimbo broke the internet yesterday with the observation you alluded to, saying what was factually accurate, ACC was the premier conference, in part because Clemson won the national championship. Looking forward to the mega matchup, Bama versus Florida State to start the season. We know both teams lost a lot of guys to the NFL, Dalvin Cook moving from Florida State to Minnesota. How does the talent level between Florida State and Bama match up this year?
Really even, to the point that the case can be made for this being the biggest season opener ever. If they are ranked number one and number two, that would be the first time in the 81-year history of the AP poll that has happened this early or ever in a season opener. So, no, they have. And Florida State will be favored to win the ACC, which we just said was the best conference. And Alabama will be favored to win a fourth SEC title. And both are so good to the point that the loser, I think, can afford, quote-unquote, to lose, win the rest, and get back into the playoff.
Dennis, this show based in Southern California, USC, was dynamic down the stretch last year, but Washington made it to the playoff. If you had to handicap the Pac-12 between USC and Washington, who are you picking to move on to the playoff this year?
I think it's clearly USC. Look, I don't know if USC will make the playoff, but they will win the Pac-12. They have a lot back, obviously, and Sam Darnold's going to be the Heisman favorite. But I think it's significant that USC and Washington don't play each other. So we won't have that matchup of the two best teams, and Washington is the second best team. So, you know, aside for some hiccups they may face in the regular season, I think USC has enough depth to win the Pac-12 title. You know, if they go 9-3 and win it, they're not going to be in the – you know, not necessarily going to be in a playoff. So I think they're good enough to win the Pac-12. We'll see about the playoffs.
Taking you around the country, spotlighting college football with Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com. Feels like JT Barrett's been in Columbus for a decade and a half. A lot of pundits picking Ohio State once again, the Big Ten. But we know what Penn State was able to do second half of last year, including that win over the Buckeyes. How do you see things playing out in the Big Ten?
Yeah, knowing Urban Meyer like I do, he's going to be supremely motivated after that skunk job against Clemson in the semifinal. First time in 295 games that Ohio State had been shut out. And I think the key to this team, obviously, is JT Barrett becoming a downfield passer. He early on in his career, he finished fifth in the Heisman and was seen as the new dynamic dual threat quarterback. Well, now teams have kind of figured him out. He just doesn't have the savvy to go downfield, and maybe last year Ohio State didn't have the receivers to allow him to go downfield. But if they're going to do anything, they're going to have to get something out of his arm. I think they'll be able to run the ball well. The defensive line particularly is really, really good. But they cannot progress to the next level until JT Barrett becomes a better thrower. Now, Ohio State, I think, will be a playoff team,
But again, when you get to the playoff now, it's more about the tournament. Anything can happen, as Ohio State showed in 2014.
Dennis, let me be upfront. I'm not a fan of Brian Kelly. I think the optics are challenging when you have a coach making millions of dollars screaming at quote-unquote student-athletes. I know Saban does it, but he can do whatever he wants because he's the king. So what's the outlook in South Bend this year, coming off a four-win season, having to replace DeShone Kizer? How much job security does Brian Kelly have at Notre Dame?
Well, he has to win, and I think that means above 6-6 because I agree with you. I think his presence is growing a little thin there. I get that they were in the national championship game and went undefeated in the regular season in 2012, but that's suddenly 5 years ago. And look, schools like Notre Dame, Alabama, Ohio State are competing against the NFL or coaches when they go and look for coaches, not just college coaches. And it just seems, I get this vibe from Brian Kelly that's where he would want to be. That he may be better suited in the pros. I think he's a very, very good coach. But the bottom fell out last year in a season where he had, for the first time in his 25 years as a head coach, he had a quarterback drafted that high, DeShone Kizer. So something was missing last year. I think it starts with 6-6. Anything above that, you can talk about keeping Brian Kelly. Anything below, we're going to have a discussion.
Final thought on the future of the sport that we both love so much. You have spent a lot of time writing about super conferences, realignments. It feels like things have settled. How stable is the Big 12 bringing back the championship game, even though they only have 10 teams again this year? Are we going to see more dominoes fall in the next 3 to 5 years?
No, we're not. I think everything stays as is, really, for the next 8 years until – next 5 to 8 years until the Big Ten contract expires in 2022. I don't think there's any desire for any of these schools to leave. If you're Texas right now and you know you're going to be making $60 million a year in 2020 with the network, with the backloaded media rights fees, why would you want to go anywhere else? And for Texas and Oklahoma – there simply isn't a better place to win championships right now than the Big 12. I'm not saying the league won't break up or those schools will go anywhere else, but to say the Big 12 is in trouble right now is ridiculous. There's too much money to be made.
Dennis, as always, we appreciate the information. Thanks so much for giving us a few minutes today here on CBS Sports Radio.
You bet. Thanks, Brian.
Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com, and I know most of us are easing into college football conversation, but by now you should know, or hopefully today was the first time you heard, mega matchup, let's hype it up, the game of the millennium. Forget about Connor and Floyd, this is actual sports. Bama, Florida State in September, and Jim will get you ready every step of the way. As mentioned, just through a quirk of scheduling, we're going back to back to back with guests, meaning phone calls available coming up in about 15 minutes at 1-800-636-8686. More of your tweets, like college football talk already. I'd rather listen to Cal in Vegas recite the works of Shakespeare. Canadian Hitman. Canadian Hitman, I'm the fill-in hack looking to get this show from point A to point B, plus SEC Media Days gave me a legitimate justification. We're not just making stuff up. We'll do that in the final 20 minutes. Straight ahead, will the Cubs bounce back in the second half of the season? Talking baseball with Joe Sheehan from Sports Illustrated. But now it's time for a sports update. Here's Rich Ackerman with the latest.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Brian Weber on CBS Sports Radio.
Much more NFL conversation on the way, top of the hour, and then in the final hour of the program, 2:20 Eastern time, scheduled to be joined by three-time Super Bowl champion Willie McGinnis of NFL Network. You can be a part of the show through a variety of ways. Pick up the phone, 1-800-636-8686. Don't cost nothing. Hit me up on Twitter, BW Weber, Weber with two Bs. Emails, I'll complain about their lengths, available at Rome at haveatake.com. Second half, baseball season. season kicks off tonight, so we're pleased to be joined by Joe Sheehan from Sports Illustrated. Joe, it's always a pleasure. We got to start with Aaron Judge. The clones have been crushing me. Apparently, I am fixated on the comparison that because he's tall, he's Paul Bunyan. So let's call him Gigantor. We know he's been unstoppable, but is it fair to make him the face of baseball already?
I think it's going to be hard to do that when you consider that he's already 25, and we're probably seeing his best season. Certainly a lot of improvement year over year. This is a guy who, a year ago today, Brian, wasn't really taking AAA by storm. He got called up at the end of last year. He struck out in half his at-bats. I think you can project him. I think the power is real. I think if you want to look at him as somebody who's going to hit 30, 35 home runs, somebody who's going to play a good right field, somebody who's going to draw some walks, he's going to be a good player. But the chance that he's going to continue to be an MVP candidate is small, and it's very hard to consistently cover the strike zone when you're, as you say, Paul Bunyan-esque. I think we're going to see the average drop a little bit. Great story. I don't think you want to elevate this guy to the face of baseball, especially when you consider that you have an outfielder in Mike Trout who very much should be the face of baseball.
But, Joe, as we think about what Judge has done for that franchise and for your sport, fair to say that we have a big enough sample size to think that he's going to be better than Kevin Moss, not flame out?
Yeah, I think he'll land somewhere between Moss and Oscar Azokar. I think those 1990 Yankee teams, we got all excited about guys like that. But, you remember Judge had a prospect profile coming through. This isn't Moss, who was kind of an aging minor leaguer when he hit the majors and, had a big year. You look at Bob Hamill, you look at Joe Charbonneau, a lot of these older prospects who hit the majors and had one good year. Judge has a better profile than that. I think the surprise here, though, is that he's hitting 330. When you looked at him as a prospect, you said, okay, this guy's going to hit 260, 270, and the power is going to play. The risk was that he was going to be Chris Carter. He's going to hit 210, 220, and the power was going to play. So I think the batting average is the thing to be concerned about here. But there's no question. This is real power. This isn't just always a guy who showed up at the home run derby and impressed. He has power that he can get to in a game.
Thank you for indulging the Kevin Moss illusion. I could have gone Steve bye-bye Balboni. Remember he went back and forth from Columbus to the Bronx?
Yep, this was you're triggering me, Brian. This is my youth, growing up in the city and watching the Steinbrenner Yankees. So I'm going to have some flashbacks here that aren't going to be pleasant.
You and I need a podcast because I'm destroying Jim's great show here. Joe Sheehan, Sports Illustrated, is our guest, CBS Sports Radio. I respect your opinion, so I want you to weigh in on what's going on with the surge in home runs. As you know, June saw the most home runs of any month in the history of baseball, including the steroid era. What do you think is the foundation for all of these home runs, and how much of it might come down to the baseball itself?
Yeah, it's never one factor when you have this kind of explosion, but there was some really great research done last month over at The Ringer by Ben Lindbergh and Mitchell Lichtman, at 538.com by Rob Arthur. These guys have looked at the baseball, both examining its physical qualities and also we can collect some great data now on, how much the air drags on the baseball as it goes from the mound to the plate. Guys who are much smarter than me are saying that it's the baseball, not that it's juiced in any kind of intentional manner. This isn't some big scandal. It's not, Deflategate 2.0. But the range of tolerance, when you think about making a baseball, picture on one end you have softballs, and picture on one end you have Titleists. And what they're doing now is basically making baseballs that are more on the Titleist end of it. So that's what's changing the game. You've got pitchers that are throwing these golf balls, and guys are hitting them. Now, it's not just that, though. Throughout the game now, it's no longer slap the ball and run. Everybody's trying to get the ball in the air. All of this new data we have on the value of launch angle and where you want to hit the ball has taught hitters, forget an opposite field approach. Forget a two-strike approach. The most valuable thing you can do is hit the ball hard and far. I know this is really high-level, sophisticated sabermetric stuff. Ted Williams would have told you this 70 years ago.
John Sterling, it is high, it is far, it is out of here.
That's right. So John Sterling now should be in the Hall of Fame with the batting coach. But this is what it's a combination of effects. It's also pitcher velocity. Pitchers now throw harder than they ever have before. So if you're a hitter, just get the bat on the ball, it'll go. That's about the additional pitching velocity explains about 20% of the increased power in the game. But really, what you have are hitters trying to hit the ball out, hitting pitches that have been thrown faster than ever before, and hitting baseballs that are, if not necessarily juiced, at the high end of what we would consider hitters' baseballs.
Talking baseball with Joe Sheehan. Check out his great work, SI.com, and the Joe Sheehan newsletter. So if we follow what you were laying out there, and I think obviously you're spot on with the data-driven analysis, What does that mean for watchability? Because to me, it's not the pace of the game. It's how little is going on. It's all or nothing at all, home run or a strikeout. What's that mean for a generation of kids that aren't inclined to watch baseball as their first option, and now when they're watching, not much is going on?
Right, and I think we can make a little too much of this, certainly compared to the NFL, where if you really want to break it down, it's not like the NFL game will have a lot of action here. With baseball, though, it's all part of a conversation. Can the game be played more quickly? Yes. But as you say, the action, the lack of action is the real problem. Almost a third of events in baseball now, the ball's out of play. Home runs, walks, and strikeouts. And that's a huge jump over the baseball segment we watched in the 80s and 90s growing up. It's going up a little bit every year, but it's going up, and over time you really notice that. And you notice it when you're just watching a game. Like, there aren't, you don't see first to thirds anymore. You don't really see plays at the plate anymore. There's been a reduction in the kind of exciting plays. You know, defense. We saw some really good defense in the All-Star game. But when you have the greatest athletes who have ever played baseball, that's what we have right now. I mean, incredible athleticism in the game. The lack of balls in play means that the athletes don't get to do as much. So, it's about everything. The pitchers need to pitch faster. The hitters need to stay in the box. But really, baseball's got to figure out a way to keep the ball in play, which makes the game more watchable.
Joe Sheehan from Sports Illustrated is our guest. Brian Weber in for Jim Rome on CBS Sports Radio. Let's spotlight marquee team starting in Chicago. At some point, since it's July and the second half starts tonight, should we stop talking about the Cubs dealing with emotional hangover coming off that epic World Series victory? What's really going on that slowed down the Cubs this year?
You know, it's the defense is a big part of it. Last year, they had one of the best defensive teams we've ever seen in baseball. They turned about three out of every four balls in play into outs. And that was always going to come back down. You just, when you have a team that has an extreme performance like that, it's going to regress. You also have personnel changes. You know, Dexter Fowler leaves, and Kyle Schwarber comes back to take left field. That's a huge defensive downgrade in the outfield. So that's hurting the Cubs. So you've got, you know, expected regression, a defensive downgrade. And the pitchers haven't been quite as effective, although it's exaggerated by the ERA. Lackey, Arrieta, Lester, you know, Hendricks, two of those guys have been on the DL. They've pitched a little bit worse, but it's been exaggerated by the defense behind them. To me, Brian, it's the offense. Only Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo have really met expectations. You look at Wilson Contreras, he's been all right. But you look at Addison Russell, Albert O'More, Kyle Schwarber, they have this core of very young hitters that they expected to step forward this year and give them the best offense in the league. Well, they're ninth in runs going into the All-Star break. They're a below-average offense. That, to me, is not getting enough attention. The focus has been on the pitchers, but the Cubs absolutely have to get their young hitters going in the second half if they're going to catch the Brewers.
Joe, we're getting closer to the trade deadline. Let me be specific. Non-waiver trade deadline, so let's talk about pitchers that could be on the move. You hearing anything about Yu Darvish?
Yeah, I think the Rangers are the most fascinating team at the deadline because when you look at who they have, you look at a Darvish, you look at a Beltre, you look at a Lucroy, they could make a push this year and then just try to collect draft picks for those guys. They're in this AL wildcard mix, which is a total mess. But at the same time, they've got a young core where you say, okay, let's trade for guys who are going to play around Mazzara and Odor. You know, you've got Cole Hamels locked up for another 2 years. They are right down the middle. If you look at the team and say, hey, what is our roster telling us to do? It's telling them to wait and see if they can have a 7-game winning streak or a 7-game losing streak. I think they're willing to trade Darvish, but I don't think they're eager to do it. The Rangers have never been a team to bail out of a season. I think they're going to stay. As long as they have a reasonable chance at the wild card, they're going to hold on to Darvish.
How about Chris Archer? The Rays love his affordable contract. Is his name being thrown around?
It is, but you know, this is another team that's right there in the wild card mix. The Rays, they're actually only 3.5 games behind the Red Sox in the division. It would be, for a market that's already a troubled baseball market, it would be a really bad statement for them to put Archer on the market, even if it means they get back top-tier prospects, get back the kind of package that the White Sox got for Jose Quintana. It's a really bad statement to get to this point where you finally got an above 500 team, you've got a contender, and you're going to trade not only your number one starter, but a highly marketable, popular number one starter.
Joe, let's wrap it up with New York's other team, the Mets, crushed by injuries. That's not the responsibility nor the fault of Terry Collins, but you know how it works in that city. Somebody's got to be the fall guy. Collins, final year of his contract. Is he going to pay the price?
I think he will. I mean, you got to remember, too, what is Collins, 68 years old, I want to say now. He hasn't really done a great job bringing along some of the young players. That's been an issue, and the Mets are going to have to start transitioning some of these young players, whether it's Conforto in the majors now or Ahmed Rosario, who should be the shortstop next year. The injuries, look, you build around young pitchers and old hitters. You can't really be surprised when you have a lot of injuries. But yeah, I do think this will be Collins' last year. Look, he got the Mets back to the World Series. He'll always have that feather in his cap.
Joe, as always, a real pleasure to have you on this program. When you write your book about Ed Figueroa, can I write the foreword?
You absolutely can, Brian. I'd be happy to have you.
Thank you, Joe.
Take care.
Joe Sheehan, Sports Illustrated, indulging old-time baseball references. I got killed on Twitter yesterday for a lot of things. You guys really despise me. That's understandable. I'm not Jim Rome, and I realize that I'm an acquired taste, I'll put it that way. But in addition, apparently, to every Aaron Judge reference, including Paul Bunyan, I don't think I mentioned the Blue Ox. I guess I talked a lot about professional wrestling. If I'm lucky enough to come back next year, we're booking Tony Schiavone. But my frame of reference when it comes to baseball was growing up in the 80s as a baseball fan for two reasons. We only had 25 channels. Baseball was king. And then secondly, this will be a stunning development, I was not the most popular kid, and there was no internet. So I sat in dark rooms and memorized long lists of Cy Young Award winners and Hal Newhouser going back-to-back MVP awards for the Tigers during World War II when the best players were overseas. So baseball was my first love. I'm not anti-baseball, but I want to stay employed. So coming up, final hour of the program, virtually wall-to-wall football, 2:20 Eastern time, scheduled to check in with three-time Super Bowl champion Willie McGinnis of NFL Network. A couple more tweets to pass along. Top of the hour is open. 1-800-636-8686. Emails, Rome at haveatake.com. Twitter, BW Weber, Weber with two B's. The great Jacob in NorCal. And I know the legends are staying away, understandably so. I'm just the substitute teacher. Save your best stuff for Jim when he's back on Monday with a smack off coming up July 28th. And I can't do anything negatively or positively. I'm not going to revoke your golden ticket. But if you want to use me as batting practice, that's cool as well. Jacob, Brian Weber, quote, emailing the show is a great way to interact. BW, this email is so long, we live in a Twitter. Well played with a couple T's, world. What the hell, BW Weber? Okay, let me explain the Twitter bit. Have I talked enough about myself? That's part of what you do as a sports talk show host. Years ago, as that Yankee conversation would suggest, I grew up in the suburbs of New York City. I had a real distinctive Bronx accent. Oh, there's the enunciation. We speak quickly on the East Coast. So when I got lucky to come west for college, I got tired of being mocked, so probably spent too much time working in front of the mirror like Bugsy. 20 dwarves. Yes, I know I over-enunciate, but there are some T's in there, like Tennessee Titans, Jason Witten. You don't have to do it as annoyingly as I do. Tebow update via an email. Rome at haveatake.com. I talked about the walk-off home run last night. A reminder, it came in the seventh inning because we're focusing on high A minor league baseball. Still, the numbers, if you care about what's going on in minor league action, are pretty good for Tebow. 11-game hitting streak, .327 since getting promoted from low A ball. Three home runs, and he was the hero last night. Greg Johnson in Apple Valley tweeting, I won't be impressed until Tebow hits a walk-on-water home run. Well played. Couple more emails. Pablo Sandoval was a big bust with an even bigger bust. Jason Perry in Phoenix. Well played here. And now I got another 19-paragraph email. How about this? When the show is over, I'll do a podcast reading your emails and over-enunciating them. And this is me being a hypocrite, as we always are in our business. The whole point of this is to complain about as many things as possible, but the staff has been fabulous, and thank you for enduring me. I'm not done yet. Got to deal with one more hour, but I know how it works at the end of the program. There's always a flurry of activity. We have a Twitter contest today. Somebody's going to walk away with a $50 gift card, thanks to O'Reilly Auto Parts. So I want to thank James on the board, Austin, our producer today, and we'll get through the full goodbye coming up in an hour. Also, the Lady Bookers, fabulous to work with, did great work this week because this is the dead zone of sports talk radio. And to come up with compelling guests like we just heard from this hour, with another big name on the horizon coming up at 2:20 Eastern time, a real pleasure to work with professionals. I'll do my best not to destroy the program, meaning we're sticking to the football theme for the final hour of the program. But you want more Connor and Floyd, so we will revisit that topic as well. 1-800-636-8686. Tweets available. BW Weber, Weber with two B's, emails, please keep them short, Rome at haveatake.com because I can't read. Brian Weber in for Jim Rome on CBS Sports Radio.